that is it in terms of slides that I have for this part of the presentation. And I will entertain your questions. I imagine you have some.
Excellent. Any questions from members of the commission? Go ahead, Mr. Boak.
Thanks again. So this is backing up just with respect to severance taxes and royalties. And I understand we're on private.
There we go.
Thanks again. So this is backing up just with respect to severance taxes and royalties. And I understand we're on private land versus state-owned land. Yeah. And I've struggled with this and struggled to try and explain this at a last meeting, but the actual water, like in a river, like who would own the actual water? We're talking about rights of use, mm-hmm. and absolute dominion is a different type of right of use, but the actual water and rivers, my understanding, is held in trust by the state.
By the state, yeah.
And is that the same with respect to groundwater? I just have never seen anything explicitly saying this. And so it makes it a difficult question to answer. All we see is the absolute dominion. And I think for our purposes, it may not matter as much because absolute dominion, unless you're thinking of royalties versus a severance tax.
Yeah. So I will say this, that is something people in my community, like legal academics, are thinking about, right? Is groundwater part of the public trust? Traditionally, the public trust doctrine, it started as a doctrine that applied to surface waters. That was the first application of the public trust. And we've seen expansion of public trust doctrine into, or at least attempts to expand it into other areas, air, other types of natural resources. I don't need to get into all the particulars there, but suffice it to say that groundwater is an area where people are thinking about whether or not that is part of the public trust. If it is part of the public trust, then you have the same obligations that you would have as with respect to the surface waters, right? And there's a great body of case law on what those public trust obligations are and what the state can and can't allow to have happen with respect to public trust resources. And Maine has some itself, there's some law court case law on that very subject, as I'm sure you're aware. And so you could imagine porting that over if someone were to conclude that the public trust in the state of Maine included groundwater. A couple things about public trust doctrine that are worth noting. For the most part, public trust doctrine is a state law doctrine. And so it can vary from state to state what's included within the public trust within that state, because it's held by the state in trust for the citizens of that state. And so there's case law all across the country on public trust, and it differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And Maine has, as I suggested, a body of case law on public trust law. It's not a huge body of case law, to be quite honest with you. And so and it is a very rapidly developing body of case law in the sense that there have been a number of recent cases at the law court talking about the public trust doctrine. And so if you were to, you know, try to articulate groundwater as part of that public trust, I imagine that's something that you would ultimately have to seek, you know, the law court's approval of, right? Because it's, in a sense, I've written before that it's kind of a pre-constitutional idea of the public trust. Like it is inherent in sovereignty that a government of the people, you know, the natural resources that belong to the state, the land that is part of that state is held in trust for the people of that state, is an idea that almost predates the Constitution, if you want to think about it that way. And so it probably would require a law court opinion saying that the groundwater is part of the public trust, right? We could say all day that we think that that's true. You could probably legislate it, but at the end of the day, the law court's probably going to need to approve that legislation because someone will likely challenge it. So I imagine that would be the process if you were interested in including groundwater in the public trust. It's not, I can't say sitting here today that it definitively is or isn't because it hasn't been answered.
And I guess the follow-up question to that, and I'm just curious about this from a taxing versus royalty standpoint, but yeah. Are there any jurisdictions where that's been determined to be
not part? That I'm aware of, no.
Additional questions from members of the commission? Go ahead, Mr. Gordon.
Thank you. Just for my own curiosity, I was wondering how wildlife fits into the public trust doctrine. Because I mean, wildlife is regulated in Maine.
Yeah, and it's part of the public trust, Generally speaking. It's owned by the state, right? It's the least wildlife until it's reduced to capture on private land. it's owned by the state. And that's why we permit, you know, hunting and fishing through the state, right? That's the explanation for that regime, right? That's their ability to do that comes from that public trust right to that wildlife. But you'll notice that it's not an absolute prohibition on reducing that wildlife to private use. And if you want to think about wildlife as a natural resource and fees and taxes associated with the capture of wildlife, you could look at the revenues there as well, right? Inland fisheries, for instance, like you could see how much they're collecting in fees for fishing licenses and for hunting licenses. And those are, in a sense, you could group them into this natural resource revenues category because each of those licenses technically entitles the holder to capture some of the state's natural resources. Many of them are not successful from what I hear, but they have the right to do that. And so that generates some income.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Would that include lobster? Where does lobster fall into that?
Lobster is a little bit different because we don't want to get too far down this road, but let's suffice it to say that fisheries are regulated by the federal government, right? And that's primarily because we can't say definitively that fish are in state waters or in federal waters. They move around, right? And so the lobster fishery, for instance, takes place both between state and federal waters. And so it is a little bit different. Yeah.
Go ahead, Representative Gramlich.
Well, thanks to Mr. Berger for opening that that up a little bit. But it's just, and again, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole. However, I'm going to ask.
Go for it.
When we talk about public lands and when we talk about the fees associated with wildlife as natural resources in terms of hunting and fishing and everything that you just described, which is wonderful. Thank you very much. Are you able to just speak a little bit to what intersection, if any, there might be on absolute dominion and the other statutes that you referenced in terms of how that impacts our tribal lands in the state of Maine?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, so Indian law is a very different subject in some ways, right? In particular, of importance to this discussion, is that lands that are reserved for the tribes are in some ways outside the jurisdiction of the state. Now, in the state of Maine, we have a very unique situation with respect to the governance of those lands that allows the state to have a bit more control over what happens in Indian country than in other states. And we could talk about that if you want, but let's just lay that as the baseline here. And note that that tribal landowners, just like other landowners in the state, regardless of this sort of different regulatory regime, would have absolute dominion rights to pump just like anyone else that owns land over an aquifer within the state of Maine. It is also the case that they would likely still have to follow this groundwater permitting scheme because of the unique situation that Maine has with respect to its tribes and the regulation of their activities on their land, that it would not be the case in every jurisdiction in the United States of America. In some jurisdictions, tribal governments and the federal government would be working together to figure out how they extracted groundwater resources potentially. In Maine, it's likely that we can pretty safely say that the regime is pretty much the same on tribal property, with some exceptions with respect to some other the regulation of activities themselves that might be regulated by the federal government. But I don't want to go too far down that route.
So then, yeah. It's fair. Correct me if I'm mistaken.
Yep, no,
I'm happy to be corrected. Is it fair then to say that there are no special kind of considerations in terms of tribal lands, in terms of groundwater and protection of groundwater on tribal lands?
I don't think that's right to say.
Okay.
So that's going a bit further. So, and the reason that's going a bit further is because there are treaties between the tribes here in Maine and the federal government that have then been recognized through the Settlement Acts, which I don't know how many of you know about all of this, and we could be, again, this is a whole course we could teach, but the very short version of this is that the Settlement Acts enshrine in Maine law and in federal law the protections that were and the rights to natural resources that were reserved for the tribes in those initial treaty relationships. And so to the extent that you could make an argument that there's an imposition on one of those treaty rights as a result of groundwater extraction, that would be a different cause of action than anything I've talked about here. Also, on the flip side, if you could argue that there's a right in that was reserved in one of those treaties for a particular tribe to extract water, that would also be a different basis on which to claim the right than what we've talked about here. And so there would be more to it than just the simple calculations that I'm describing.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Additional questions to members of the commission? Go ahead, Mr. Boak.
Yeah.